It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Toys are designed to be fun, but they also stimulate creativity and imagination. Children and grown-ups learn from play. The Heinz History Center's new exhibit, Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, which is an exhibit now through May 31st, demonstrates how these toys reflected three decades of dynamic changes in American life. Here to tell us more is History Center President and CEO Andy Masick. Andy Masick, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's good to be here.
So, Andy, kids have played with toys for centuries, but how did toys evolve in America during these three decades that you focus on in the new exhibit, the 50s, 60s, and 70s?
After World War II, everything changed. The industry that geared up to fight World War II had to turn to other pursuits, and one of them was using those new materials like plastics to make toys. And the consumer generation grows up after World War II. The other big thing that happens is television. You know, before World War II, there's no TV. After World War II, TV is an advertiser's dream. It's a medium that nobody has ever anticipated before, and it gets right into people's homes, selling them stuff. And new programming is generating ideas for toys. So whether it's Howdy Doody or the Mickey Mouse Club or Davy Crockett, now kids want what they see on television, so a whole new line of toys are possible.
Well, and in the 50s, guns were a big part of the toys of the 50s. What societal norms or gender stereotypes were reflected through toys, especially in that post-World War II era, which produced some pretty violent stuff?
Well, you're absolutely right. Toys were gendered in the 50s and 60s, and even in the 70s. Boys wanted G.I. Joes and director sets. Girls wanted Easy Bake Ovens and Barbie dolls, Susie Homemaker products. And the toy marketers knew this, and they pitched through television their products to boys and girls. Later on, mothers actually said, wait a second, can't boys play with dolls and can't girls play with erector sets? And so there was a dilution of that sort of targeted gendered marketing that we still see today.
How did the space race of the 60s affect toy production?
Well, President Kennedy challenged America to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade of the 1960s. Part of this was because of the Cold War. You know, America was fighting communism and the Russians. And so there were all kinds of toys related to spies and military activity. But the space race was wrapped up in that because there was a competition, a race with the Russians to put a man in outer space. So when Kennedy challenges America to put a man on the moon, all of a sudden there are rockets. G.I. Joe goes into outer space, and there are laser guns, robots, you name it. If it was had to do with space, people were producing it, from lunch pails to television programs.
How did it change? Because there were still plenty of toy weapons in the 60s. I seem to remember a James Bond attaché case being sold, like the one in the movies. It fired not real bullets, of course, but these little pellet things.
Yeah, they were all kinds of things that actually shot things.
Yeah.
The Johnny Eagle
series. Put your
eye
out with that stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Johnny Eagle, you can get an M14 that could kill someone in seven different ways with grenade launchers and bayonets and bullets. But you mentioned the spies. Remember the man from U.N.C.L.E.?
Mm-hmm.
Ilya Kuryakin had a long-barreled, silenced pistol.
There was a toy replica of that.
There was a toy replica of it. You could get all kinds of things. Fake fingers, the sixth finger, they called it. It looked like you were pointing your finger, but it really shot your finger at somebody. So this was part of that Cold War era. But after World War II and before Vietnam, gun toys and war toys were especially popular, from little plastic figures to guns. During the Vietnam War in the late 60s and very early 70s, toy guns and war material went down in popularity. And I think a lot of it had to do with mothers not wanting to encourage their kids in that direction. Even G.I. Joe went on furlough during that period. But after Vietnam, toy weapons make a comeback, and G.I. Joe returns. This time, he's got real hair, real fuzzy hair. He's got a scar on his cheek because some Hasbro executives were concerned that boys would think that this was a doll, and they would be fast to tell you, this is not a doll. This is an action figure. And look, he's got a scar on his cheek. He's a tough guy. So that machismo was built into the war products.
So when the guns went away for a while, at least in the 70s, what were they replaced with?
Well, there were all kinds of games and balls and things that came out. There were etch-a-sketches, art toys, and spirographs, and that sort of thing.
The super ball, the Whammo. The Whammo had the super
all kinds super of dangerous
balls.
Thing. The super ball, you could bounce. It would break lights and windows and make marks on your mother's ceiling. There were clackers, those highly compressed balls with a string in between them, like a bolo. You clack that thing, it made a horrible noise. But you could also lasso your little brother with it, or garrote to your neighbor.
So wonder we survived.
Well, there were jarts. Those are the lawn darts. Remember the gigantic
those.
Darts that you could hurl at your neighbors. And you weren't supposed to hurl them at your neighbors. You were supposed to hurl them into a ring that you'd set up on your lawn. But those things were finally outlawed. There are many other nuisance toys as well. And even the gun toys by the 70s had little red plastic inserts in the muzzle so a policeman or an adult could see in an instant that this was a toy, because some of those toys were becoming so realistic that it was hard to tell the difference.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Heinz History Center President and CEO Andy Masick. We're talking about the exhibit, Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, what they are, how they changed and evolved. Tell us about Pittsburgh's Wolverine Toy Company.
Wolverine was a big toy manufacturer in the early half of the 20th century. They made Sandy Andy toys. These were pressed steel toys painted that were sandbox toys or beach toys, buckets and other shovels and things. But by the time of World War II, they were making homemaker toys as well, kitchen sets that looked just like your mom's kitchen. The color schemes were the same, but they were still pressed metal toys with sharp edges. These were the Sunny Susie series that complemented the Sandy Andy toys. So about the time of late 1940s, early 1950s, plastic really becomes big. And all those metal toys that were once made by Pittsburgh tool and die makers like Wolverine, they had to change or die because plastic was a lot cheaper, injection molded plastic. Mm-hmm. And so they came out with their own line of plastic toys. And eventually, by 1970, Wolverine moved away from Pittsburgh and went to Arkansas to make their plastic toy products.
Cars have always been a big part of a child's imagination. How big was the car? Because we're talking about a kind of a post-World War II mentality. So as we got beyond the war and the car became more of a staple of American middle-class life, it was natural, right, for toy makers to market these things to kids?
Yeah, car makers were marketing their products to the grown-ups, and they were marketing the miniature versions to kids, especially boys who loved matchbox cars, as well as toy construction equipment made by Tonka and others. And then, of course, Barbie and Mattel got into the mix and said, hey, we've got this hot doll. This was the first doll that wasn't a baby doll. Think about this. Before Barbie comes around in 1959, most of the dolls were baby-shaped. So a little girl could imagine that she had a baby. Barbie was the first doll that looked like a woman, like an adult. And so now Barbie has a dream house, she has a dream date, she has a dream car. And Tonka started making cars to compete with Mattel that Barbie and Ken could actually ride in. So these were pretty big cars. So the car industry and toys and television, they all go hand in hand.
Any other toys we should mention that people can see? There are more than we'll be able to get to during the course of this.
Well, I know that a lot of people who come to the exhibit see that Slinky, and they can't resist making it walk down the steps. We have steps set up so you can do your own Slinky. That's a Pennsylvania product that evolved out of a World War II spring. Then there's Barrel of Monkeys. There's Rock'em Sock'em Robots. You know, knock your friend's block off with a plastic robot with the thumb controls. There are Hungry Hippos. There's just, well, it's more fun than a Barrel of Monkeys. And you can sing the Slinky song. It's Slinky, it's Slinky.
It's Slinky, it's Slinky. The favorite of girls and boys.
Well, clearly the advertising resonated with you, Andy Masick. Andy Masick, the Heinz History Center president and CEO, joining us to talk about the exhibit, Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Andy, so good to have you here with us. Thanks so much.
You bet. Come down to the History Center and have some fun.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.
It's Slinky, it's Slinky, the favorite of girls and boys. Everyone wants a Slinky. You ought to get a Slinky.